All right, we're live. The Android Headlines Show, episode 96. My name is Jeremiah. I'm joined tonight by Nick and Alex from the site. You guys want to say what's up?
What's up, everybody?
Hi-ho.
So, Alex, good to have you back, man. I know you were out last week.
And I'll probably be out next week.
Hey, that's all right. That's all right. We'll hold it down without you, but we do miss you when you're not here, man.
And I'll definitely be gone the week after that.
Yeah, you're going MWC, right?
Yeah, I think I get back Thursday night. Maybe it's Friday night. I think it's Thursday night, though. But I leave Friday, next Friday. So Thursday I'll probably be last-minute stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, man, we'll hold it down. Next week could be a MWC preview, and then we'll be recapping everything the week, I guess, when you're flying home. So it'll be good, man. I'm excited for you. I know it's going to be a crazy time because you got to be in like four places at once all over. So
it's more like 40.
They've got those events so spread out all over Barcelona, man.
It's not like, you know, Vegas where it's kind of close. These are like, you know, half hour, 45 minutes apart from each other.
Crazy.
Yep. We really got to pick and choose what we want to be at, but.
And everybody's doing it at 7 p.m.
Yep. Yep. Well, let's talk about some stuff this week. I know we got some news out of YouTube. They're working on a subscription model they're going to be announcing in the next few months. I saw a rumor tonight that they are going to be unveiling some kind of kids programming, kids service or something, on Monday. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as well. T-Mobile released their Q4 numbers for 2014. Samsung acquired Loop Pay. We got some new Project Aura stuff to talk about. Google killed Helpouts. So we'll talk about that a little bit. That service is no longer or won't be available here shortly. And then If This Then That released three new apps to kind of make life easier using their service. But Alex, talk to us about some news, man.
So YouTube is looking to do a subscription model in the next few months for YouTube, basically. I don't know if it's going to be like sort of like, was it Music Key, or did they rebrand that? I know they're thinking about it. But it's probably going to hit like the independent guys, like MKBHD, you know, all those guys that make money off of the ads, because if they go subscription, likely they won't see the ads unless they act like Hulu Plus. And that's going to hit them with revenue. They're not going to get as much revenue as they were before. They're saying a couple months from now, so we're guessing probably Google I.O., because that's at the end of May. And that's coming out of Reuters, so that's probably a pretty concrete rumor or leak right there.
And it works well for Music Key when if I happen to use YouTube for listening to some music. It's nice not having ads. I don't know that I watch... I don't know that I care about cutting out the ads on video. I don't watch enough video on YouTube for that really to matter to me personally, but I know a lot of people do. And you make an interesting point about YouTube content creators, like some of the big ones that we know and that we've talked
like
to before.
Us.
Yeah, yeah. That I'm curious if how exactly Google is going to cut content creators in on some of that subscription revenue, or even if they will.
I almost wonder if it's going to be like any of these other music subscription services where the artists, they make basically a certain percentage off of every play, don't they? Isn't that how Pandora and some of these other places work?
Yeah, but with those it works out to like pennies.
Yeah.
You get fractions of a penny per stream on a song, you know, so people are
correct.
Even big time artists are getting checks for like $20. So it's not a huge source of revenue for them, the way YouTube is. You know, somebody like MKBHD He's Marquise is making six figures, you know, solid six figure income every year, and has been for, you know, 3-4 years now. So yeah,
he like blew up last year, or maybe it was 2013 he blew up. And he got super popular, like overnight.
Yeah, yeah. And it's because he's making great stuff.
Yep.
But how does this affect his income, you know?
And it's not just him, there's a ton of other ones out there too. Austin Evans comes to mind. There's a few other ones as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's not even in the tech world, there's a ton of people making videos and making money,
yep.
making a living on YouTube, and now this will, I'm sure this will affect them.
Even most tech sites like us, we make a little bit of money off of YouTube. It's not our primary source, because obviously we have the website with everything that we write every day of the week, of the year, but it's still a big chunk of revenue for most sites.
Yeah, yeah, and how does that, I guess it really is going to depend on how many people sign up.
Yep.
For the subscription service, how many people are paying a monthly fee, how many ads are, how much ad revenue is being cut out?
I wonder if they're gonna like tie it in with MusiKey and All Access. Because I was surprised that they tied those two in together.
I wasn't really surprised with those two because they're both music services. You'd be really hard pressed to get people to pay for All Access and MusiKey. I wouldn't. If they had made it a separate deal, I would still just keep paying for All Access. I don't really care that much about YouTube.
I would have dropped it altogether.
Well, and you know, there are people that would have done that. There are people that would have just paid for MusiKey. By bundling them together, I think it boosts the numbers a bit. They can immediately say all the people that are subscribed to All Access. They can call all those people MusiKey access, you know, MusiKey subscribers too.
Yeah.
This video one though, it's a totally different service, and if they're going to be cutting content creators in on the revenue, they're going to have to create a new revenue stream. They're already splitting the money with All Access and MusiKey. You know, they're already having to pay for licensing for all the music. So they'll charge additional for whatever this video, this ad-free video service is.
And it'll probably be another $10 a month. Or maybe it'll be like Sling TV and be $20 a month.
But yeah, I'm thinking
probably mostly because of ESPN, because I know they charge pretty high for licenses.
Yeah. I'm thinking $9.99 a month with maybe a $7.99 promotion, like they did with All Access when it first launched.
Probably.
But, yep, that'll be interesting. That's supposed to be coming in the next couple of months.
Yep, we're looking at probably May, so probably Google I.O. So moving on to T-Mobile, this morning they announced their official Q4 numbers, which aren't all that different, I don't think, from what the preliminary ones they announced in January. But 2.1 million net subscriber additions, so that's a 19.4% revenue increase over last year, right, Nick?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, so they added completely, for the whole year, they added 8.3 million customers, which is quite a jump for them. 80% of all growth in the industry was from T-Mobile.
Yeah, and that was the craziest thing to me, is how much that growth was. Like, basically nobody else grew in 2014 except for T-Mobile.
Their revenue for Q4 was the highest growth, too. It was somebody from Wall Street posted on Twitter. I think it was T-Mobile at 19.4, and then Verizon was like 7.4, and then AT&T and Sprint actually went down in revenue. They still made a little bit of money, but they actually went down.
Holy smokes. Yeah, that's, Verizon and AT&T have been adding, what, 1,900,000 to 1.1 million, maybe 1.2 million customers, net customers per quarter.
Yep.
So you're looking at 4.5 million customers a year, and T-Mobile almost doubled that last year. It's insane.
And their churn rate is really low. And for those that don't know what that is, that's basically the number of people leaving T-Mobile versus the ones coming to T-Mobile. Verizon has actually this skyrocketed. It's like a record high for them right now.
Good. Everybody leave Verizon.
Yeah.
Kick them in the teeth a little bit.
I know. I was cracking up. I was cracking up yesterday. I'm driving and I see a billboard for Verizon. It's just a real bland, unassuming red billboard, and it just says on there $45 a month for 1 gig of data and unlimited calling. And I'm thinking, really, guys? This is what you advertise? This is like a joke. Your competition is at least $10 cheaper a month, and you probably have at least 3 times the amount of data. Like, it's ridiculous what they push. I know they got the network, but you know that's only worth so much for most people.
Yeah, that's what they're gonna push. Actually, I was looking at the T-Mobile map today, and there's a lot of like empty spots, especially out west. I'm glad I didn't take T-Mobile with me to San Francisco last week. I'm glad I took Verizon.
Yeah, that's T-Mobile. Just, I mean,
T-Mobile probably would have been good there, but they won't take the chance.
Yeah, I think anybody who travels, you pretty much have to have Verizon.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's probably not most people. You always look at the numbers. They always say, oh, yeah, we cover, I don't know, 300 million people or whatever. And that's usually because they cover all the metro areas. So you got all your major metropolitan areas, which obviously most people are going to be in, and you pretty much figure it's not really a big deal.
John Ledger actually said today in his the live stream, that conference call, they actually did a video on YouTube with it. But basically he's saying that they're now number 3. I'm not sure how believable it is, because they're like this close to each other. They're both in the 55 million like ballpark. But I think Sprint is still like 100 customers or maybe 1,000 customers ahead of them. And they're basically saying they're counting inactive MVNO subscribers as well. But Sprint got back to me today and said that they're not. So, but I think in the next quarter or two, they'll have a bigger lead. Although Sprint is turning stuff around, because I did add a bunch of customers last quarter.
Yep. Yeah, I know. I saw that.
Go ahead, man.
No, it's okay.
I think Ledger is anticipating Q1 of 2015 with those numbers, with that estimate, saying that they're number 3 now. I think that he's already counting what they're just kind of guessing or assuming is going to happen this quarter. If it doesn't happen this quarter, they'll overtake Sprint next quarter for sure, but just based on the growth pattern.
Yeah, right now T-Mobile has the momentum, but Sprint is adding, or they're turning around, so now they're adding people instead of losing a ton of people now.
Yeah. So that'll be, I mean, that's good for competition. I'm glad to hear that T-Mobile's official numbers, they're putting up big numbers, and I'm also glad to hear that that Verizon is losing customers. I mean, they've been just really kind of ignoring what everybody else is doing. All the shakeup that T-Mobile has introduced, that Sprint and AT&T have responded to, Verizon basically said, we don't care what they're doing. We don't care that what they're doing is good for customers. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep advertising 1 gig of data for $45 a month. Like it's 2012 still.
And the funny part about that is their revenue still went up, I think it was like 7% over last year. AT&T is the one that's been playing catch-up with T-Mobile, and their revenue went down like 4.1% over last year.
And that's why Verizon doesn't want to mess with this. They don't want to start lowering.
Because they got to keep their shareholders. They have to keep their shareholders happy too.
Shareholders aren't going to be so happy when customers are leaving, and you, instead of taking a reduced average revenue per user, it's dropping all the way to zero,
Because T-Mobile's ARPU actually went up, which I was kind of surprised at, because their prices haven't really changed. I guess they're getting more like multi-line plans going, friendly plans, I guess.
I'm sure the payment plans probably go into that too.
Well, they don't really make, well, they make revenue, I guess, but not like profit, because they sell it like at the price that, if you were to buy it unlocked, it's the same price. It's not like you get interest on it, or they get interest on it.
Yeah, but they still make money off of the phone. Yeah. I don't know what they pay the manufacturer, but, you know, I mean, just think about the Nexus 5 launch, right? What they sell for, like, $150 over what Google charged?
Well, that's what everybody sold it for, even LG.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. It's probably the same amount of margin on every phone that they make.
I didn't look at the iPhone 6 Plus and the Nexus 6 and the Note 4. Those things are all $700+.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll I'll be interested to see what happens when the numbers are announced in April for Q1 of this year. So let's switch gears. Let's talk a little bit about some hardware, Nick. Tell us about that this week.
All right. So the big news I think this week was that Samsung officially bought LoopPay. This was something that was talked about and I think sort of announced a couple months ago. I think Samsung just kind of said they were interested in doing it. I met with these guys, the LoopPay guys, at CES. And if you guys out there have not heard of LoopPay, it's basically this little thing. If I can pick it up. Just a little. It's about the size of a credit card type of thing. It's a little bit smaller. It's got a little button on it, and it pairs with your phone via Bluetooth. They have an app. It's got a whole bunch of really nice authorization, PIN codes, passwords. It's a really super safe app. This thing works. It's a mobile payment system that works via a magnetic reader. So right now, you know, with debit card, credit card, whatever, you swipe it through the magnetic strip. This thing, you just tap on the strip, and it magnetically transfers the information to the strip. So it's as simple as a regular mobile payment thing. You open up the app, you know, select your thing and scan it. The biggest difference is that if you don't have an iPhone, they don't have a case for it. So you have to carry around this little thing, which makes it a little bit inconvenient, obviously, for Android phones. So they had talked about, they told me at CES they were going to be getting cases out for various Android phones. Who knows what's going to happen now that Samsung owns them. But the big news about it, besides the fact that Samsung bought them, is that the CEO, Will Graylin, said that it's going to be in an upcoming Samsung smartphone, which means the Galaxy S6, more than likely. So where Apple and Google have been going with NFC-type payments, where the retailer has to get an upgraded unit that supports the NFC, this thing will work with essentially every card reader out there. So there's, I mean, basically overnight, Samsung, in effect, has completely taken over the mobile payments industry because you literally won't have to do anything at the retail space, end of things. All you have to do is buy a Galaxy S6 or whatever phone that Samsung packs this thing into, and you now literally have the perfect mobile payment system.
If you can get consumers to use it.
Yeah, well.
And that's where Samsung's going to have to figure out. That's what Apple has done so well with Apple Pay is they've made it super simple. You don't even have to open an app or type in a PIN code. You just use your thumb and tap it on the mobile payment deal at the retailer. So if Samsung can come up with a way to make it that simple, absolutely, all over.
Yep.
As long as it's secure. But that's the hurdle they're going to have to overcome. If you're making people buy an extra case for your phone or carry around that little strip, it's not as convenient. People are not going to use it. You know, I'd throw that in my car, but then I'd forget to take it in to the gas station when I go inside to buy a cup of coffee or whatever, you know? So
yes, Samsung might actually do it the exact same way Apple is, because I did hear with the home button, the fingerprint scanner is going to be just like, you know, Apple's, where you just put your thumb on it and it, you know, registers your fingerprint instead of the swiping thing. It's not really worked for me, especially if I'm trying to unlock it with one hand instead of holding it and then swiping down.
Yeah, and I imagine the reason they did the S5 like that was because of component things. You know, Apple bought a supplier that had all that stuff, so they pretty much had all the supply.
Probably did. Because I know HTC did it that way, or the way Apple did it with the One Max, the M7, and then Huawei did it that same way with the SN Mate 7. Yeah, the SN Mate 7. And those were great. The MX4 Pro is the same way too, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and that works perfectly. The thing is ultra fast.
It actually works better than the Mate 7, and that thing I thought worked really well.
Yep. Yeah, so if they can do both of those things, they will have this thing locked up. I'm just, given Samsung's track record, I'm not holding out much hope for that. But you know what? It can always be surprised. I'm very impressed that they have done this, because I've been very impressed with the way Loop Pay works. And I don't know. We'll see. It's a great possibility, if nothing else.
Yep, yep. I'm still kind of curious about the security on it too. It's just a magnetic reader. Is it any easier to access than a secure NFC element? Like if I'm standing next to you on a subway and you've got an NFC device in your pocket, I can't really access that easily. Correct. Can I access a magnetic reader any easier? I don't know the technology. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I'm real curious about that too. If it's as secure or more, you know, I can't imagine that it's more secure.
Yeah.
But
I would think it's about the same, because like with the Loop Pay, you have the little button on the thing, and you have to press the button just like you would. I mean, think of this as a home button. What's the difference? There's literally none. I guess the difference would be there's no fingerprint scanner in this thing, right? So if anything, that would make it even more secure, because you have to press and hold the button, and it has to recognize your fingerprint, and then you can scan the thing. So unless you are sitting there with your thumb on the button in your pocket like an idiot, then you probably can't read it from the thing.
Right, okay, so it's not transmitted until you press the button.
Yeah, it
makes sense. You...
And for what I've heard with the S6, it's going to be built into the back of, or the, you know, like the back cover of the S6, the Loop Pay is, and the back cover is not going to be removable, what I heard today. So it could be just pretty much the same as Apple Pay. You know, you put your finger on the finger or the home button, and then tap it on, or you know, touch it to the terminal. And there you go.
Sweet. Well, that's exciting, man. It really is.
Yep. And then the second piece of hardware stuff we have is two Project R related things. So the first one is Toshiba was the first to show off working camera sensors for Era. So we have a 5 megapixel and a 13 megapixel sensor, both of which are like 6 and 7 millimeters thin. So you're talking, you know, super thin sensors that would fit on this body. You wouldn't have like some massive protruding thing on the back. Both of these things are pretty comparable with current 5 and 13 megapixel sensors out there. I know you, Jeremiah, really like the idea of Project Aura. I'm not sure how up on it Alex is or not, but I know I've been really, really excited for this thing for a long time, and it's great to finally see hardware manufacturers getting this stuff out there and having working modules and all that stuff.
Yes. Man, to finally see these components being made by somebody who's not in a Google X lab, essentially.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
I guess it's not Google X Labs. It's the other division. I've drawn a blank on the name right now. But anyway, there you go. Thank you. But to have actual manufacturers making modules is super exciting. The camera ones, yes. I'm sure it's relatively easy compared to some of the other stuff that we've that has been conceptualized. But that's super exciting, man.
Yep, yeah, and Toshiba, it'll be interesting to see if Toshiba sort of takes off this year as a camera sensor maker in smartphones, because we have that rumor now that the HTC One M9 is going to have that 20-megapixel Toshiba sensor in there.
Yeah, we saw that today, too.
And Toshiba's not the only manufacturer that's rumored to, or not even rumored, but going to have Project RS modules. Yep. This company called Yez, they're kind of like Blue. They make really cheap smartphones that are unlocked, you know, no LTE or anything like that. They've got a few modules that are going to be on display at Mobile Congress, and Toshiba likely will as well. So we'll probably see quite a bit of Project Aura in Barcelona.
Yeah, and going on that, it's kind of interesting to see some of these other manufacturers come in, especially one that's, you know, a little bit bigger like Toshiba. Toshiba's a pretty well-known name, unlike maybe some of the other ones that are kind of up and coming. Yeah. And going off of that, you had LG was talking about how they weren't really thinking we were going to be seeing big design changes this year. outside of, you know, the G-Flex 2 has got the curve thing, but they did that last year with the original G-Flex. So he's saying maybe next year we'll see a big design thing, who knows. And I don't know if that was hinting at Project Aura or if that was maybe something else they have in the works. And they're thinking, you know, who the heck knows, more than just a curved display or buttons on the back would be is kind of what I thought he was getting at.
So I'm starting to think now, if for that, are we not going to see their Galaxy Note Edge type smartphone that was rumored to be shown off at CES behind doors? Because that's kind of a design change, because, you know, we just have a flexible display with LG and then a regular, you know, IPS on the G3. So that, to me, that's a design change. But
I think he took it more of, I don't know, who the heck knows, really. I was thinking it was just like your normal candy bar style, big display on the back, buttons on the side kind of phone.
That's probably what it's going to be.
What kind of demand is there for the Note Edge or for that type of device? I mean, I know it's only been out for a little while, but I can't see, compared to something even like the G-Flex, let alone Project Aura, I can't see a compelling argument for
them. Unless they can put it out for a cheaper price than Samsung, which Samsung's is probably up there because it's a QHD display. If they can put it out, you know, like a 720 or 1080p display, and they put it out like around, you know, $550, $600 instead of near $1,000, I think there'd be a bigger market. Because I don't think many people are going to want to spend, you know, a grand on a smartphone that just has a, you know, a display on the edge. I mean, I used the Galaxy Note Edge. I reviewed it, and it just, the edge, it was nice, but it was still a first-gen product. It was obviously a first-gen product because there were some issues with it, but I think those will be worked out with software. But the market, again, it's like, I don't know how many people are going to want something like that.
Yep, me neither.
Because, so, I mean, the G-Flex 2, Sprint's selling it for $504 right now, which is cheaper than what the G3 was at launch.
And the G-Flex 2 is really what the, you know, what people were hoping for with the original G-Flex. Yeah. Like, it's a great phone from all accounts.
I'm just hoping the plastic OLED display doesn't have that, the screen ghosting issues it had last year with the 720p one.
Yeah, I didn't notice it when I used it.
Well, it takes time for it to be used. It happens at low brightness, too, not at high brightness, which is what they usually do with the events like that.
Yeah, I didn't test that much of it.
Yeah. Because I noticed it, but Chris didn't notice it on his when he uses that full brightness.
Yeah, that'll do it. That's like the low brightness on the Nexus 6, right? Makes it all weird colors and crap.
If you have the ambient, or is it ambient display or whatever that thing is called? I hate that thing. I keep it turned off because it just makes it too dark.
Yep. So, some software news. Big thing this week was Google Help Outs getting the axe. Google, for a while there, was kind of chopping services and apps left and right. We haven't really seen a whole lot getting, you know, canned in a while. But it's about time for spring cleaning, and Help Outs is the first one this year to go. If you're not familiar with Help Outs, Google Help Outs was kind of a spinoff of Hangouts where you could go basically, like, hire somebody to teach you how to do things via video chat, whether it's learn to play a guitar or how to, you know, work with Microsoft Excel or basically anything that could be broadcast over Hangouts. And you talk to a doctor or, you know, something like that. There was all kinds of really helpful stuff on there, but apparently not a lot of people were using it. So Help Outs is getting shut down. The Help Outs app has already been pulled from Google Play, so you can't download that. The actual service, while it is still available, will be shutting down April 20th. So Help Outs was just rolled out August of 2013. And then it hit iOS April of 2014. So we haven't even gotten 2 full years out of Helpouts, but it just didn't take off the way Google wanted it to. So
I thought it was a pretty cool service. I never actually used it myself, but, you know. I think you could get, you know, make a little bit of money off of it, too. I think you could, you know, get paid a few bucks for teaching somebody how to do something.
Yeah, I think that was the big draw, that to get people in there. But, you know, I think this goes back to the problem that Google always seems to have. Nobody knows their stuff exists. How many people do you think actually knew Helpouts was a thing, much less how to get to it?
How many people know about Hangouts?
That's what I'm saying. Like, they just suck at marketing. They really do.
I mean, people only know about Google Plus because you need that Google Plus account for everything.
That's the only reason people know about it or use it. Well, I don't say that's why I use it, because I use it for other things, but you know what I mean. I think a lot of people don't use it like Facebook.
Yeah. Yep. That's why they know about it, is because they got to use it for everything.
Yep. Yeah, so I hate to see something like that get shut down, especially a service that's well done and is a really good idea, rather than Google trying to invest a little bit more in it and tell people about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah, it is. So if you do use Helpouts, make use of it until April 20th.
Sorry, right?
Yep, it's going away. It's going away. The other, I think, big thing this week, actually came out today, was an announcement from If This Then That, or IFTTT. A lot of people use the service, but apparently the company was finding that it was still a little more difficult than they wanted it to be for people to use. So they announced 3 new apps today. They're calling them Do apps. There's a Do button, Do camera, and Do note. Now, each of the apps do different things, but they're designed to make using If This Then That easier. I also think the company's rebranding to If instead of IFTTT, just to make it.
They rebranded the apps. I'm not sure if they're rebranding the whole company, but I know they rebranded the iOS and Android, the main app, to If.
Yeah, just to make it easier on people to pronounce and talk about. But the 3 apps, Do Camera is obviously a camera app. It will let you tie your smartphone camera or tablet camera to services like Dropbox or to an email account, so you can auto-upload photos or auto-send photos when you take them. You can tie it to Twitter or Facebook, so that when you take a photo, it'll automatically share it. Some services like Dropbox and Google Photos already have auto photo backup, but you can kind of build your own recipes to, you know, send photos to different places with Do Camera. Do Note is a text-based app. It'll let you, you know, like, send tweets or email or text messages. You can send, like, create calendar entries. Basically anything that's text-based with a note-taking app. You can create recipes for, you know, stuff to happen to create new notes or, like I said, calendar entries, stuff like that. And then Do Button is, I think, is the main If app, is what they're rebranding it. It's kind of all-inclusive. So you can build recipes that will do things like post a canned message to an IM service, or turn your, if you have some kind of smart light or smart home situation, you can turn your lights off and on, turn your, you know, thermostat off and on, using messages with the Do Button app. Same thing with the Do Note and the Do Camera app. You create the recipe, and then all you have to do is open the app and hit the button. Hit a button on the app to trigger that action. The apps will let you create or use 3 recipes. So again, they're keeping it simple. They're not giving you, you know, the ability to roll 20 act, you know, 20 recipes to trigger different actions. You only get three. There's a bunch that are already preloaded in the app. I downloaded Do Camera and Do Button. I haven't played with Do Note yet. But there's a bunch of recipes already loaded in the apps. And you can make your own if you want to. The goal here is just to get more people using IF and make it easier to use. So this is, I thought this was pretty cool.
Yeah, IFTTT is a really great service. I use it for a lot of stuff that I gets posted on my Twitter account. Like everything from the site goes through IFTTT to Twitter. But with some of the, like, you know, the smart home stuff, if you have like the Philips Hue lights, you can just go ahead, open up the app, and, you know, turn them on or off just right through your phone, which is pretty sweet. And I think you can already do it through like the Philips app, but, you know, doing it through IFTTT is even cooler because you can set it up to like, if I leave, you know, this area using your GPS, it'll turn off your lights, you know, and you can even do that from your smartwatch as well, Android Wear.
And some of the stuff you could do with apps like Tasker.
Yeah.
But again, it's kind of confusing to learn. IFT was never that confusing compared to Tasker, but it was still, you know, an extra service that you had to learn the steps of how to exactly build this stuff. So they're making it really simple with these apps. I think it's a good move.
Yeah, and maybe that'll be something that finally gets me into these things, because how many years have I talked about wanting to use any one of these apps? And like, you used to use Tasker, Jeremiah, and there was another one that one of you two used for a while there. I don't remember what the name of it was.
Llama?
Llama was another one. There's been a couple.
I was going to call it Sheep, and I was like, I don't think it was that. I think it was something else.
Yeah, I've been using IFTTT for, I don't know, about a year now. But it's mostly for, like, the site's social media stuff and my own. I don't really use it for, you know. You can do all kinds of recipes for, like, your Android phone and your smartwatch. It's like, the only one I could think of is, like, you know, automatically upload my picture somewhere, but there they go to Dropbox and, you know, Google+. Where else do I need to put them?
Yeah, and I think that's the main reason I've never really picked it up is, like, yeah, it feels like there's a huge learning curve, and I don't really know what I would even get out of it. I'm like, I don't even know what I would want to have automated. Like, maybe looking through the recipes and stuff would help me be like, oh, yeah, that would be kind of nice, you know, but just haven't sat down to do it.
Well, there's one recipe here that would actually be pretty cool that I just found. Basically, if you lose your phone, you can text to it, lost phone, and it'll turn up your ringer volume so that you can actually call it and hear it. Of course, yeah, you just have some battery life left, so that's the other issue. Besides it being, you know, the volume being low.
And I had a task created in Tasker to do that for a lost phone. Send it a text message, and it blasts out a loud alarm sound. It would put up, like, a security message on the screen and then lock the phone. But I had to, like, dig through a Tasker wiki to find out, you know, and walk through all these steps to do it. So if you can do it really easily with an IFT recipe that's already, you know, rolled for you, you just got to enable it. It makes the service a lot more compelling. And you're right, Nick, just going through and looking to see what's available might trigger some ideas for you.
Also, if you have a Moto X or a Droid Gerbil, you don't have to do anything. You just say, okay, Google, where's my phone? And there you go.
Assuming that it can hear you?
Normally it can, unless you lost it like on the other side of the country or something. But if you're in the same room, it can hear you.
Right, I'm thinking like my kids lost it in between the couch cushions and I'm upstairs in my room or something.
You shout loud enough, it'll hear you.
Yeah, that's true.
Just like you're yelling at your kids.
What? No. Nobody yells at their kids. I don't ever yell at my kids. That's a lie. But yeah, so I think that's the big news stories this week. Alex, what's new in your Android world? What do you got new this week?
Well, I got these Xiaomi Mi headphones from the Xiaomi event last week. Been using these for pretty much everything, really. I haven't even used the A-Audio Legacy headphones that I like so much. They're really nice, actually. I think they said $89, but I think it might be cheaper than that when they converted it to U.S. dollars. But they're really cheap headphones. They're high quality. These are gold, obviously. I think that's the only color to come in. But I also have earbuds. they also sent this home with the Mi power bank or battery pack. I think it's power bank. It was a 10,400 milliamp power bank. Review went up on this one today. It's only got one USB, but you know, it's better than nothing, I guess. Also have the Mi Note. It's not the Note Pro, it's just the regular Note. I was hoping for the Note Pro to come home with, because that one has the Snapdragon 810. This one's just the 801. But it's got 3 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of storage, 5.7-inch 1080p display. It's actually a really nice 1080p display, especially after using 2K displays all the time now. And it's like $320, I think, converted. I think it's ₩2,299 RMB in China. So it's not bad. It's the actual Chinese version, so it doesn't work too well here. But I can get HSPA on T-Mobile.
Nice.
And then I have the Voom. I think it's a Voom box or something like that. So it's a really big speaker, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good battery life so far. It's waterproof, weatherproof, so I have to go toss this in the snowbank and probably lose it.
Not if it's that big.
You haven't seen our snowbanks.
That's true.
Yeah, it's the Voombox Party. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Battery life so far is really good. I mean, but I've used it for probably about 10, 12 hours already, and it's still going. Nice. NFC, which is nice. I actually just finally found it. Took me a while. It's got NFC, Bluetooth 4.0. There's a speakerphone, or there's a microsite, so you can use it as a speakerphone. And I think that's about it.
Sweet. Nick, what about you, man? What's new?
I think my two biggest things, I got the Huawei Honor 6 Plus. This is the one with the two cameras on the back. So this is a dual 8-megapixel shooter setup. It combines to make a rather good 13-megapixel image. And then, of course, because it's got two, it can do a lot of depth effects, sort of like HTC did with the One M8. So I've really been enjoying using that over the last couple of days. Biggest problem is it does not play nice with T-Mobile. For whatever reason, like, the calls are okay. I've had it drop calls in areas where I never get drop calls with my OnePlus One. You know, I could deal with that or whatever, but you cannot get MMS at all with T-Mobile. I've tried everything.
Really?
I've looked up different APN settings. I've tried changing it from fast to, I think the other one's EPC or something. I can't remember, but I tried all kinds of crap.
You're not using Google Voice, right?
Nope.
That's probably why it worked for me, because I'm just using Google Voice.
Yeah, it might be it. And
I haven't tried phone calls because it's the Chinese version, so I'm not really thinking about the network in the review, so...
Yeah, exactly. So, sure enough, I stuck an AT&T SIM card in there. Everything worked perfectly. Just don't have LTE. So, I don't know. It just doesn't like T-Mobile's network for some reason. If you got AT&T, it's a great, seems like a great, you know, fairly cheap phone for what you get. That's like you said with the Mi Note, it's 3 gigs of RAM, 1080p display. It's $300-$400 depending on where you buy it from. Phenomenal camera, seems like so far. A lot of really nice software stuff. You guys know how much I hate MIUI, so this is a better alternative in my opinion. That's, I don't know. Just not a big fan of that Xiaomi OS.
I think I actually like Flyme out of all the Chinese OSs. I think I like theirs the best.
It's between theirs and Huawei's EMUI. It just depends on what I'm feeling like during the day, because all of them have their own quirks. But I think I lead towards Flyme.
Did they really change it from Emotion UI to EMUI?
I think it's
because on the Mate 7
normally.
Yeah,
like every time
Emotion UI.
If you go to the updater, it just says EMUI. Of course, you can't read it. It always does that. I do that every week.
So they just shorten it to from emotion to M, E M.
Now you can sort of read it. There you go, EMUI. So it's sort of like MIUI, except, you know, whatever, slightly different. I also got the number one X-Men X1, which I left in the other room like an idiot. It's a crazy name for a crazy phone. This thing is basically insanely durable. You had the Kyocera, right, Jeremiah? Or was it you, Alex, that got it? The one you
threw
rocks at and stuff?
Oh, that one was mine. But okay. Jeremiah had a good one as well.
It reminds me of either of those. It's like a normal-looking rugged phone. Basically looks like a phone in a giant case, except it's the phone. It's, you know, it's fairly heavy, whatever. I wouldn't expect a rugged phone to be thin and light, but it seems decent for what it is. It feels really solid, though. Like, this thing feels like it's really high-quality build. You're supposed to be able to run it over a car, which I am planning on doing. I'm going to pretty much do everything they say you can do with it and throw that in the review. So it should be lots and lots of fun. I'll make sure to put videos of that stuff up there, too.
Fantastic, man. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah. The Kyocera Brigadier, man, that thing was insane with that Sapphire display. You can run that thing over. I mean, I dropped it so many times. It has like a lip over the screen, so that when you drop it, it's not actually hitting the screen. But they give you like a knife when you get reviewing it to scratch up the screen. You scratch it up, you know, you just polish the screen or the scratches right out, and it's like brand new again. It's crazy.
Yeah. See, I think what I like about this thing is there is no lip. So, like, if you go out and buy any regular phone and get, like, an OtterBox case or whatever, you have that horrible, stupid lip on every side to deal with, and it's difficult to swipe in from either side of the screen, especially for menus and stuff. And this thing is just, it's screen right over the top on both sides.
Sweet. Well, this week, actually, I got both of these last week, but we were talking to Yahoo Weather. Yeah, we had them on the show last week. So, but I got these new headphones, Sennheiser HD558s. I'm working on reviews for the Sennheiser HD439s and what's the other one? Velodyne V-Trues. So I've got those cans, both that I'm working on reviews for. The 558s are great. They're almost as good as the 598s if you're at all into headphones. There's a mod that you can do with these where you just pop a couple of the screws out from inside. There's like a plastic, almost like a gummy, I don't even know what to call it, just like a piece of tape almost. It's kind of a thicker piece of plastic. It's not just a piece of tape inside here that you can pull out, and it opens the sound up a lot more. So they're great. I kind of been nerding out on headphones for the last 6 months or so, maybe a year. I just got into it. The other thing I got recently, I haven't even opened the box yet because I've been working on other stuff, is this Divoom AirBeat 10 speaker. So Divoom, I guess, is I reviewed a Bluetooth speaker for them last month. I know, Alex, you've got one now, and then I've got this little guy. It's splash-proof. It's got a suction cup and a bike mount. It's supposed to be, like, it's got a little hook on top. So you're supposed to, like, stick it on your bike or travel with it. It's still in the plastic. I haven't opened it yet, so I don't know how it sounds. I'm sure the sound is not that great, but it does have, it says super bass on the bottom. We'll see. A small speaker like this is probably not going to have a lot of low end. I might be pleasantly surprised, but it's super portable. I think when I'm done with it, I'm going to stick it in my shower because it's got a suction cup.
It's awesome.
Just use it in the shower because why not? It's splash proof and has a suction cup. That's going to be the deal for that. The other thing new that I've been playing with this week, and I'll just cover this briefly because we're way over time. Whoops. I wrote up an article for a photo gallery app called Lumific that I had never heard of until they announced Dropbox integration. I think it was Dropbox integration. It's what they announced this week. It's basically the Google Plus Photos app, or the Google Photos app, but way faster. So the layout is very similar. I don't know how well you can see it. Let me turn the brightness down a little bit. It groups apps by date, but you can also group them different ways. I still keep it by date just because it's easy. There's my dog. There's the kids playing in the snow. There's my wife. But you can – it's way faster than Google Photos. Google Photos for me is – even on a high-end device, I'm a OnePlus One. On this Xperia Z2, it's just slow. Slow to load, slow to
Google do Photos stuff. In general sucks.
Yeah. So Lumific, okay, now it's asking me to connect to Dropbox again because I haven't connected it to Dropbox. So instead of having to have Google or having to have Dropbox installed with the photo backup turned on, you can just do it right from the Lumific app. Even if you don't use Dropbox, it's a great photo gallery app. That and there's a couple of other really good ones. I think QuickPick is another one that is fantastic. But this Lumific app has been great for me this week. So, yeah, that's about it. And I think that will wrap up the Android Headlines Show episode 96. So we are on Twitter at Android Headline without the S. On Instagram, also Android Headline without the S. All over Google Plus and Facebook. Get at us. Drop us a line. Send us an email or a message on any one of those services. Alex is always on Google Plus. I am always on Twitter. Nick is always somewhere else. But
he's in his own land.
He is. But yeah, drop us a line if there's something you want to talk to us about. And I got to give a shout out to Frankie Hernandez. He's always in here asking questions. Sending me stuff on Google Plus. So appreciate you watching the show, man. But that'll do it for the Android Headline Show, episode 96. Nick, Alex, thanks for hanging out, guys.
Yep. Later. See you next week.